You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B.
Melanie is a versatile professional and multidisciplinary innovative leader with a multifaceted career. She is a researcher, a product designer, an entrepreneur, a certified professional coach, and soon to be mother of two. With over 14 years of experience, Melanie has successfully designed and launched creative business solutions with the technology industry. During her time as a product designer, Melanie led cross-functional teams at Facebook, contributing to the development and expansion of Facebook's content moderation tools. She also played a crucial role in streamlining Facebook's community operations teams to ensure compliance with local and international regulations. Today, Melanie works as an executive and leadership coach, specializing in nurturing leadership and fostering resilience in both emerging and establishing leaders. As a coach, Melanie provides her clients with an unbiased, non-judgmental, and objective space to tackle complex challenges with clarity and confidence. Her coaching expertise covers a range of topics, including career planning, executive presence, stress management, and resiliency. Melanie is dedicated to helping individuals and teams reach their full potential and thrive in the world of design, business, and technology.
You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B.
Welcome, Melanie. How are you?
I'm well, and how are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited to talk to you today, even though I talk to you like every weekend.
It's an honor and a pleasure to be sitting here with you today and to be discussing some professional tea.
Yes. Before we get into it, we have to ask you the You Can Sit With Us premiere questions, which is what is in your coffee cup? What you drinking with us as we have this conversation?
Okay. So it's 6 p.m. where I'm at right now, and I'm drinking fresh mint leaves that my husband grew in his garden. Mint leaf tea, I should say, tea with honey.
I feel like a lot of guests in season two, y'all just be making your own drinks.
I think that's a foreshadowing for...
You know, like season one was guests who were like, I DoorDash coffee because my coffee espresso machine that I got from Pottery Barn that was $1,000 broke. So I paid $25 for this DoorDash coffee.
Yes.
Right? Or it was like, I'm drinking a Coke. In season two, people were like, I make my own hot chocolate and I grow my own ginger and I put it in water. I'm like, this is very insightful how people live.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just think resources could be better spent elsewhere. The idea of DoorDash and coffee to me makes no sense because A, that's not possible where I'm at.
I agree with you on resources. I mean, like my DoorDash budget has immensely decreased. Because I would rather pay shoes, but I'm not paying for a garden. But, you know, to each their own. Where are your people from? And how does that affect you?
Oh, I love this question. Ethnically, my parents are from the beautiful West Coast islands called Cape Verde, where they were born and raised. I was born in America. I also claim Boston, Massachusetts. But I'm a first generation Cape Verdean American in that is really important to my identity. And I was just thinking about this before I got on the call with you, that I'm now also, I'm calling in today from the Amsterdam, North Holland, Netherlands area, where I've been living here for the last 3 years from the Bay Area. And it's wild because in my family, we have a legacy of living outside of your homeland country. With the hopes and perspective of, I want something more for my child.
What is it like being the daughter of immigrants in country A and then actively becoming an immigrant as an adult in country B and raising a first generation immigrant in country B? Because I feel like we talk about immigration in this idea of like, great, great, great parents at one point moved to a different country for a better life, however they define that. And now 8 generations in, we all live here.
Yes.
Thank you, Uncle Bert, for making the sacrifice. And what's happening in your life is your parents made a sacrifice that they thought was worth it. Mm-hmm. You become the first generation of that. Mm-hmm. And then you actively decide to leave that and then become an immigrant someplace else.
Yes.
And it's almost like your kid is having this mirrored experience without really understanding it because he's so small. That's wild. That's really deep. That's really deep.
Yeah. We definitely talk about it a lot in my family. And, you know, I think a lot about the choices that my parents had to make, you know, what how in terms of language and schooling, while also assimilating and fitting into a culture that's outside of their own. I definitely experienced that a lot here as a Black American woman in a predominantly homogenous society. And I speak English, not the native language. I do stand out, so I'm more aware of my identity in that sense. And I'm also aware that it's a choice that I'm choosing to experience to ensure my child's physical safety.
And maybe at some point we will live in a world where it's not even about immigration. It's just, we're just all global citizens. Maybe it's not, the conversation's no longer this deep anymore.
Right.
Okay, I love that. So today we're talking to you about agency.
Right.
And I think that's such a powerful word that in many ways is used frequently to dilute it.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about agency with you, what does agency in corporate spaces mean? How do you define that?
In simple terms, is choice, or the act of choosing how to be and how that choice influences what it is that you're doing within that business. So your impact.
When did you acknowledge that you needed to tap into your agency in your career?
I think there's been a couple of times where I've actually done that. Most of the time, it has a lot to do with listening to my inner voice and my intuition, specifically, what's my passion? How do I want to weld the tools and gifts and talents that I have to create the impact that I want to have, while also being realistic and pragmatic that modern life is expensive. So what choice could I make in between those two deltas? I think the moment that I've truly tapped into my agency is always when I think it's a little bit too late. By that point, I've been so hopeful and optimistic about the process that when I tap into it and I finally lean into it, something amazing actually happens. I blossom and grow in a way that I wasn't expecting. And I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't acted on that. Yeah.
No, I agree with that. I think that my most revolutionary and militant agency-filled times in my career,
uh-huh.
I hate saying this, but have been rooted out of trauma or oppression.
Yes,
haven't been times when I was like, this place is great or this manager is great. It's
right.
Really come out of like, oh, this manager doesn't know who I am, or I can't stay here anymore. So give me an example. Tell me about one of your first times when you realized that you actually had choice. Despite what everybody else said in the room, you had choice about what you wanted to work on, what you wanted to do, and where you wanted to do it.
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. I think the first thing that comes to mind was my time at what was then called Facebook back then, so Meta. And I remembered becoming super self-aware that I had these gifts and talents to innovate and create products that expanded their business and their operations. And I think it was in that moment that, and I remember it very distinctly in 2019, where there was a lot of criticism from the design professional community about designers that were assisting and facilitating in the expansion of this corporation. And at the time, it didn't quite feel like I had a choice. But in hindsight, I was making a choice. By choosing to go along was also making a choice. And so that was something that I had to reckon and come to terms with. And I think now how I think about making choices is, will this place of employment support the way that I want to grow as a professional and the sort of experts in problems, so the expert that I want to become, and the problems that I get to solve and work on, and being intentional about that, but also being mindful and accepting that, you know, these are corporate for-profit businesses. So coming to terms and acceptance that there is a certain level amount evil that's being done, but being okay with that on the short term.
I mean, girl, in my Michael Jackson voice, they don't care about us. So
right. And
that's the first thing you need to understand in your corporate job is the foundation of this. It's not about you. Like, really, it's not about you.
No, it's unfortunate that, you know, you are a resource to the business and to the organization. And so being intentional, being aware of your value and the contribution and what you want to get out of that experience and what is feasible for the organization to provide for you so that you can have a realistic expectation. You can be resilient during those moments of criticism, especially during external criticism. Choice is an interesting thing, something that we're not always aware of. But when we train our mind to stop in the moment and say, I have a choice here. And what's the ideal outcome? And what's the choice that I need to make to get to the ideal outcome?
Before we go deeper into choice, I think we also have to acknowledge that in order to have choice, there is a privilege in choice.
Yes.
And so I think we should just say it out loud.
Absolutely.
There is a privilege in choice because there are plenty of people in the world that work for people / work at certain organizations that they hate, but they actually do not have a choice in the matter. Mm-hmm. Because they have bills to pay. Mm-hmm. So they can't go to the boss tomorrow and cuss the boss out and walk out, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe because of the industry they're in their financial position, it's even harder for them to find the next thing so they can provide for their family.
Right.
But what do you think about that? Let's just acknowledge the privilege in the room before we continue.
Oh, absolutely. I think I you do bring up a good point that yes, making a choice is a privilege. And this is where I'm going to push back on you because that is a perspective that you choose to hold on choice. Mm. I don't have agency here. I must do this. I have to do this. I have to do this for whatever, whether you have a parent or it's student loans. Mm. The fact of the matter is, in reality, I, as a executive and leadership coach, I would challenge you to confront that idea. What's the net benefit and the net positive of you going to work at this place for your life as a whole? How does it impact your finances? How does it impact your family life? How does it impact your home life, your social life? Because at the end of the day, it's just a different plantation. Okay, let's keep it real.
So what you're saying is that there's privilege and choice.
Right.
But at the end of the day, like you need money to provide for your family. Doesn't mean you got to get this coin here. And that's the decision.
Thank you. Yes, that's the distinction.
Okay.
Yes.
Which is interesting because I really feel like this new, you know, girl, this new generation, this Gen Zers.
Yes.
They are showing that very loudly.
Yeah.
They are very much like, I know that I've been taught that working at these huge conglomerate companies and these what we perceive as sexy titles is cute. But if y'all don't treat me the way I feel I should be treated, I have no problem Ubering until I figure it out.
I've yet to see a sustainability report come out on an employee output that year over year, 20-year-olds will become 30-year-olds, that will become 40-year-olds that can sustain this sort of lifestyle. So I do wonder at when do folks burn out and how many times do they burn out where their employees no longer deem them productive? Because the talent will always get cheaper and it'll always be fresh. And so the reality of it is, you're making a choice right now. Are you building for your future self and your future life? And is the sacrifices going to company ZYX for 2 to 3 to 4 years so that you can provide your child with a solid foundational education? Then I'm going to make that choice because it's just a smart investment choice in the end.
There's not a lot of gain in the beginning, but the long-term investment return.
Okay. It's short-term pain.
But that's your why.
Yes.
So let's go into that. Because also I think what you're saying, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this, is that in order to be prepared to make the best choice and to tap into your agency, it sounds like you really have to know who you are and know why you're in the room.
Yes, absolutely. It's important to spend time as an adult understanding where did I come from? Mm. Who am I? To inform who you are, to then inform who you want to be. Mm. So being intentional about how you're building your career and your own personal legacy within your family legacy, within your cultural legacy. So making that choice and checking yourself during those moments of when you're going to be tested, because there will be plenty of moments where you will be tested. And that's and also cultivating the skill of patience. Like, this moment is testing me, but I know that this is part of a long-term, larger, greater plan for me and my family, or for me and my future, whatever can that be. And I think that's the thing that's so fascinating. When you're a young person working in the industry, you don't think about those things. You just assume that your current lifestyle will be the default. But how do you take in the variable of life stages and plan for that?
So let's go deeper into that. I think that the more that you talk about this, I'm just thinking about my own personal career. Mm-hmm. And I'll be very frank with you. My first job out of college, out of undergrad, I didn't think about any of these things.
People, I mean, you're not supposed to.
None of them. Young, dumb, and stupid. None of them. Nobody was telling me, preaching me, lecturing me about it. And to be frank, if they were, I guess I did not respect them enough or deem them in high regard in order to listen, because I wasn't listening. Mm-hmm. it wasn't until my second job where I really started having this own self-reflection journey of who I am and therefore my why.
Right.
And then my why became the impetus and the foundation of the agency that I created in my career.
Absolutely.
And my why was the reason why I would say yes or no to things, whether it's like a work opportunity or whether it's doing this one deliverable down the hall in a conference room, right?
Absolutely.
So my question to you is, can you give us a concrete example in your life of when you really started doing the work to understand your why as a human?
Yeah, I think that came along with my coaching training that I went through in 2021. With Coactiv. So it was a year-long coaching training program. And I knew I was always interested in executive and leadership development. I also wanted to make sure that I had those skills, those resources to myself as well. And it was especially during that moment where, to bottom line it was the tools that I received from that training program that really blew my mind, that allowed me to be more intentional about how I plan and design my life the best that I can, of course, knowing that you can't control every variable, was the wheel of life. And there's 8 particular areas of your life. And just being able, like, you know, your finances, your career, your health, and just being able to stop, assess on a scale of 1 through 10, where you are, checking in with yourself in the moment, and then where you want to be in your future and how your work contributes to that or hinders that. I think that's when, if I'm being honest with myself, I really took a step back and realized, hey, some of these choices I might be making in my professional life might be impacting other aspects of my life. That's when I started being really intentional about how I wanted to spend my professional career moment in time, like where I am a working young mother. How do I want to be intentional with that time? Like physically, realistically, like how much resources and time do I have, and what can I achieve in my career within that time frame? At least knowing that, you know, you're raising them for 18 years. And how am I funding that? Yeah, I think this idea that women, like, you know, you work and then you get married in your 30s and you have your first child in your 30s. And it's like, it's a complete culture shock because you've been optimizing and living your life in a certain way. And then you become a parent. And then all of a sudden, things change. And so now you're like, oh, these systems that once used to work no longer work. So I have to reinvent them. I have to be much more intentional. And then you're also up against time as a resource. So being really thoughtful and mindful about, like, what am I actually going to care about? And what am I not going to care about? Like, what balls am I okay with dropping for this moment just so I can keep these other long-term investments in play? And sometimes for me, that's it's a hard choice, but if I'm being real, it's what it's allowed me to achieve a lot of my success metrics for myself in my life.
Mm. When do you check in with yourself? I feel like in order to activate agency in your life, you also have to check in, because it's totally okay to pivot. It's totally okay on Monday for you to say, this is my why. And then on Wednesday, it changes. Do you have any advice for folks on what's a good, when should you be checking in with yourself? I know that I check in with myself every other hour, but I'm also a Capricorn and anxiety filled. So that might be me.
There's 2 ways I think about this. The first one is like just a daily practice, like, how's your body feeling? Did you get enough sleep? Did you have 3 meals? Were your meals all potatoes and french fries? And was there some vegetables in there? Did you drink enough water? Yeah, because I think, you know, just checking in on your physical form first before you go anywhere, because first and foremost, like, we are human beings. So making sure that we're good functionally. So that's a daily practice that I like to do. And then in terms of, like, truly doing the self-discovery and reflection work, you got to create a sacred spiritual space for you to go within and get really curious about yourself. Just stop, like, and ask, like, what is it that you love doing? What are 3 things that you wouldn't do right now in this moment? Just start getting curious about your person. And if you're crazy like me, I like to document all this data. So I'm a data nut. So I look at all of the profiles. I like to really understand my person. And I like to collect a record of that. And, you know, corporate companies and teams, they sometimes make you do these personality tests. Save those results for yourself as well, because they're using it for their management strategy. You might as well know what they're using against you. My advice for checking in with yourself is the same way that a corporate company would check in with you in terms of your biannual or yearly performance. What are some things that you're proud of this year? Checking in with yourself at the end of the year, around Q4, just like when you're writing your performance review, write a performance review for your life as well. What are some things that you're proud that you achieved? Did you buy that first house? Did you make that trip to that place that you wanted to go? Celebrate those good things in your life as well, instead of just like focusing on the things that you could be doing better so that you can get that promotion, so that you can get that more money.
Now that you're a coach, right? You are no longer directly in these corporate streets, mm-hmm. which I'm not going to lie, sounds like a very freeing thing sometimes. What do you most see from your clients, people who come to you for advice when it comes around this topic? What are their issues that you are seeing for most people these days?
You know, you'd be surprised how, so I work specifically with emerging leaders and new managers to sometimes directors. And as a whole, everyone's battling with their inner critic. Everyone's battling themselves. Everyone's standing in their way. Everyone is telling them a narrative that's not serving them and looking for data to confirm that bias. What I love about my job is seeing that whole person, seeing who they are, what they achieve, and reflecting that back for them to help them see themselves, to hear themselves. One of the things I do with my clients is think about your career as a product and think about your life as programming. What's programming that has worked for you in your childhood that you'd like to keep? And what's program that you want to remove or sunset? How do you want to be in your career in the next 10, 15 years? How do you want to feel? If you can have an impact, what's that impact? What does it look like? And how does that contribute to the world? How does that contribute to your narrative? So, and then jumping back to the present moment, in this role that you are in today, what are some things that you can put in play that will get you to that future that you want to be at?
I find that so intriguing because I feel like when I talk to a lot of people, when I have my own coffee chats with random people who are wonderful, it's the ones who are parents who have this awakening. And I always tell them, like, well, everybody doesn't want to be a parent or doesn't have to be a parent to have this awakening of, oh, when I look back on my life, this is how I want my time to be spent. I hear that from parents a lot, right? I hear that from people who they're like, pre-parenting, I wasn't thinking about that. And then this kid came in the house and I really started thinking about in 25 years, when I ask my kid their favorite memories of me, will it be, oh, you weren't there? Or will it be that day that I had a snow day and you took off work and we went outside and played in the snow, right? Like what would it be? And so my question to you is, how can people who are not parents really start activating that? Because I just feel like a lot of people, parenting clicks that agency in. And I want to have a narrative that says you can also find your agency without actually
having to embark on this
parenting thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I that's a tough one. Because I don't have that. I don't have firsthand experience and knowledge on that. But if I could use examples that I see out there, like Tracy Ellis Ross comes to mind.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You know, like being intentional about how you're designing your life. Decades, maybe? What do you want your 40s to be like? What do you want your 50s to be like? Knowing there will be physical changes to your maturing body. And when I say maturing body, I don't mean like puberty. I mean like physical limitations. Like there's stress, there's strokes, there's a bunch of things that can affect your physical form.
Well, I would just add, Melanie, the call spade a spade. Like the way that I twerked in my 20s, girl, I can't be twerking like that in my 30s.
Exactly.
I can't get as far to the ground as I used to.
And
okay.
And what will your community look like then? Because at that point, your community has, if not most likely, has. They have their own family of their own. So how will you develop and cultivate your sense of family? What does relationship, long-term relationships look like for you? So designing those areas of your life as well, or being thoughtful about what vision, or at least challenging yourself and having the courage to confront yourself and be like, okay, girl, What if this, the way that we're living right now, stays the same for the next 10 years? How you feel about that?
And if I don't feel good about that, what can I do to feel good about that? Is that what we're saying?
Yes. That's taking an inventory of your life. What matters the most to you right now? Because you're only promised today. And so how are you going to take those actions towards those long-term goals that you want to experience for yourself?
What you just said, I think, was so profound about when you said, take a look at your life right now. Mm-hmm. And if this was your life for the next 10 years, would you be okay with it? Mm-hmm. I feel like my close friends and I, especially the women in my life, we're always having that conversation, especially in regards to, and I love your thoughts on this, mm-hmm. what we thought our life was going to be versus what it actually is.
Yeah.
And having to emotionally and psychologically deal with that delta, whether you like the delta or not. But what are your thoughts on that?
I still think there's fun and joy to be experienced in there. It is a culture shock, but just with like any new change to a system, eventually the organization recovers. You'll recover and you will settle and accept in this new constraints that you are now forced to design against and for and with. That also stretches you and grows you and makes you more effective and efficient as an employee. It's such a wild experience, but the nerd in me truly enjoys designing those system and organizational changes. Okay, the system's going to work like this. This is how it is. How do I want my experience within that system to be? I can resist it or I can embrace it consciously and say, this is what it is for the next 4 years. And here's how I'm going to adjust to stay sane and stay resilient. And then check in 4 years later.
Or you could just find a new system.
Or find a new system. Exactly.
Because Melanie, you know me. I will walk in a room and be like, right. Oh, I don't want to do this.
Right.
And I will instantly create a plan, many times calling you to get your feedback on how I can get out of the system that I'm currently in. Because I'm just like, I just don't want to do it.
But see, that's the thing. We create these systems and solutions for our corporate companies that we serve. What happens when we take all those skills and talents and apply that same efficiency in product management, product development ideas to our personal life?
So it sounds like the first step for this is not trying to change something, but really activate this idea of like, you are who you are and begin to understand what that means. Because I think that you can't have agency. You can't make choices without you actively understanding like who you are, good and bad and in between, what you are willing to change about that, good, bad, and in between.
Yep.
And what you're just not willing to put in the right effort.
Right. Pretty much. When you simplify it that way, this idea serves you in so many different ways. And I think that's what's really helpful for me here living abroad. I've made a choice to relocate here. What are their experiences? And like, you know, I made this choice to work for this organization. It's not ideal, but what can I celebrate and enjoy within the system for the next X amount of years and not be emotional about it? Just be matter of fact about it, because at the end of the day, we are at will employees. We do have other, you know, there's a certain lifestyle and expectation that we expect for ourselves. I mean, America is very difficult. It's a difficult place to exist in. But I also know that making that choice to relocate to the Netherlands would have an impact on my finance and my ability to build financial wealth, because I'm not in Silicon Valley. I'm away. And being okay with that, because it's saying like, I know what enough is for me. Enough is this for me for this moment. And that can change.
Yes, I can. Mm-hmm. And for the record, you are allowed to change. I applaud the change.
You're supposed to. Yeah, you're supposed to. I mean, I heard something so crazy that your nail grows, your hair grows, your cells regenerating. So why can't you evolve and change as a person? Life is to be lived.
Yeah, no, for real. I had a mentor once tell me, who happened to be a white man. And there's a reason why I say that. He sat me down once and he said, he doesn't have the data on this, but most people in the world do not want to be billionaires. And I was like, why? And he said, because most people don't want to put in the effort to be a billionaire. It requires a lot of time, mm-hmm. a lot of effort, mm-hmm. a lot of soul crushing, a lot of spirit breaking, mm-hmm. a lot of heartache, and a lot of sacrifice. And he said, majority of people, regardless of what they think, they do not want to be billionaires. Now, if you're not making any money and you're living paycheck to paycheck, I can see why you glorify this person who's on the billion-dollar list.
Yeah.
But most people don't want that, because they don't want to put in what it takes to do that.
Yes.
And I said, so what's your point? And he said, my point is what you have to realize, Lexi, about your life and your career and your finances is that at a certain point, there's going to be enough money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at a certain point, somebody offering you more money, but taking away your peace mm-hmm. or taking away things that you value, mm-hmm. it is not worth it. And you will happily and graciously walk away. And so I think his point to me was, he was like, as you build your career, just understand that money is not everything. At some points in your career, money is everything. And for the record, Melanie, I've taken jobs
right.
for the money. Didn't last long, but I have taken jobs for the money.
Same as what.
But I think his point was, is that when you get to a certain level in your career and you start seeing a certain lifestyle that you have, mm-hmm. if someone offers you $1 million a day, but in order to make that $1 million a day, you have to
compromise your integrity and your right. values and right. And be in your body of work.
He's like, would you do it?
Your reputation.
Would you do yeah. it? And he said, and despite what capitalism feeds us every day, most people won't do it. It was one of the most profound financial conversations I've ever had, especially coming from like this white man who in many times symbolizes capitalism. You know what I mean?
That's because like this, there's so many layers.
100%.
The first layer, I'm like, 100%. Okay, that's provided that you're not dealing with any, that you didn't experience childhood trauma that allows you to have the energy to just continuously go ham.
Ooh, okay.
At this goal, okay, of being a billionaire. Secondly, I think most of us in the world know what enough is for us, but we just don't speak it out loud because everyone's willing to. At some point, you're like, yeah, when do you want to enjoy your life more and just chill? What does that look like? Oh, after I pay my student loan, after I buy a house, after I do this. Okay, well, then will you be happy then after you do that? But then I also admire these people who want to be billionaires because truly, if it wasn't for their innovative and crazy genius ideas, most of us wouldn't have a place to work. But again, that comes with a certain level of privilege, making sure that you didn't have childhood trauma, that you can sustain that and be relentless and have all the support so that you can zero in and focus on achieving that status. And the reality of it, I think there's also a certain level of acceptance, like who is that actually attainable for?
Yeah, I know it's not for me. I think my issue, Melanie, is that I think at around 25, 26 was when I realized that I wanted to be Black, blessed, lotioned, and left alone. So I realized that very early in my life. And some people may think that's bad. Some people may think that's good, but I like distinctly remember the moment where in my head, and I didn't start saying it verbally until a few years ago. I was too afraid to say it verbally. But when people were like, where do you want to be at 40? And I was like, Black, blessed, lotioned, and left alone.
Exactly. I mean, I'm in my mid-30s. I bought my first home, you know, which is a big deal for me. And I have my parents' health, my in-laws' health, my husband's health, my health, the health of my children. So I'm so incredibly privileged and lucky for that. And we're able to have a fresh, healthy meal that we prepare ourselves at home. And to have that space to actually do that is completely wild and crazy. Fun fact, for the time that, you know, that decade that I worked in tech, I never really cooked for myself. And that was a skill that I decided to cultivate later in life.
Oh my God, I didn't either. You're so right. And so, no, like that's deep. For folks who don't know, you know, in Silicon Valley, a lot of these companies, they feed us for either really cheap or for free. I don't think it was till COVID hit that I was required and then slowly started finding joy and gratitude and being able to cook a meal for myself. Because going to these companies every day, you know, Melanie, we'd have breakfast, lunch. I never stayed for dinner because that was my boundary, but I would always pick dinner up on the way.
Yes. Same. But it's like just taking that moment, at least for me, where I'm at my stage of life, like taking that moment to nourish my body, to prepare myself for what is about to come. And celebrating myself, like that is something that I don't take for granted. And I know that that I'm speaking with a lot of privilege from that place. But I also, you know, just having immigrant parents and seeing them work so hard taught me to really value the experiences that I get to have for myself, or rather that I choose for myself. So like when making the choice to work at within those large corporations, also being proud of my achievements to work there, because that's also a prestigious thing for some folks. But yeah, just taking that moment to not just pile on yourself and really build up yourself before you step into or onto their turf. That goes back to know who you are, know you have value. It might not be rewarded or recognized in the way that you want it to, but having that long-term view in mind, but I'm still going to come here and do this for X, Y, and Z, because that's what I'm aiming for. And this is how, you know, I think somebody said it on your podcast, this is how your 9-to-5 funds is your VC funds, your future dreams.
Yeah. But you have to be able to verbalize that dream.
Yeah. But again, dreaming is also a privilege.
Dreaming is also a privilege. You know, you've heard me say it. I think one of the many things that colonialism did for people was it kidnapped your ability to dream. Because in order to be in a state of realistic dreaming, not just like sitting on the bed, like I want to be Spider-Man tomorrow, but actually like I want to do this and let me sit and figure out how to do it. You can't be in a state of survival.
Yeah.
It takes a lot for somebody who's in a space of survival to be able to dream and make a plan.
And that's where I recommend, you know, therapy a lot. You know, therapy has been great for me. I at this point, I'm like, I've invested so much in therapy to just understand myself and to heal unresolved trauma that I had been carrying around with me without really truly knowing that that was there and impacting my performance and the way my self-confidence and the way that I was viewing myself. I was like, oh, yeah, I think that is one thing that, you know, be aware that might creep up and be ready to do something about that when that does proactively, because you don't want it to sabotage your success.
Well, as we close, because that's a weird place to close, where can we find you? How can we support you?
Mm-hmm.
How can folks stay connected with you? Because you are such a great coach.
Oh, thank you.
That I think activates a lot of this stuff and requires people to really think about their next move.
Yeah. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Melanie Arujo Valdez Olmos, or you can find me at Design Department, where I am an executive and leadership coach at. But LinkedIn is the best way. DM me. We'll set up something. I really love holding space for folks to be intentional about the choices that they're making professionally and how those choices either support or hinder their dreams.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being you and being here.
Thank you for having me. This is fun.
You can listen to You Can Sit With Us episodes on Spotify. For more information, visit our website, lexib.com, and our LinkedIn account at LexiB. And make sure to follow our podcasts on Instagram at SitWithLexiB. And don't forget to subscribe to our Spotify channel.